So Hare Krishna, welcome. Thank you for joining. And today we're going to talk about women and self-worth. And the perspective is from the bhakti perspective. I'm sure we've heard a lot of definitions on self-worth from psychology and modern science and, you know, what feminists have to say. So what we're going to cover today is some of those definitions, but majorly we'll talk about where do people who practice bhakti yoga get their sense of self-worth from. And how we want to have a permanent basis for our sense of worth and having this temporary basis, you know, the basis that a lot of people have to say is so wavering that our sense of worth keeps going up and down. So I don't want to go through something so distressful where, you know, someday I'm happy and then someday I feel like a sense of worth and someday I don't. And, you know, I want to situate myself in something that is, you know, like more foundational, more, you know, permanent, not temporary. So even if I know this science and I know this thing that I'm going to share with all of you, it has been a struggle for me also to apply. But what I believe and what, you know, has been said is that, you know, if we constantly try to change our mindset through, you know, the things that techniques we will talk about today, then gradually we will come to that particular point. Because the way we've been assessing ourselves over different many, many generations and many, many lifetimes and has a certain basis. Now, to change that basis is going to be a huge effort, but we're going to try. And we have Krishna to depend upon. So whatever we're going to talk about is based on the teachings of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, we don't really need these seminars that much if we devote our time in reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Because he has answered a lot of questions. He has spent so much time in writing all of these books to bring us to this platform of bhakti, pure bhakti, and reconnect our relationship with the Supreme Lord. And he's not only given explanations on that, which is of course the major part of the work, but while you're reading that, you also understand society, you also understand people, you also understand natures, you also understand politics, you also understand diplomacy, you also understand what should a government head do and what should a wife do and what should a husband do and what should a brahmana do and what should a, you know, a businessman do, ethics. You know, if some university, like on the humanities side, can just have all of Srila Prabhupada's books and just have all the socio-political, psychological, all kinds of courses based on Srila Prabhupada's books. So he is actually, the reason we have these courses is because we don't read Srila Prabhupada's books that much. And another reason to have these courses is to show that whatever we are presenting over here is from his book. So, you know, let's go and read. Let's go and read his books. Let's go and hear and let's understand him as a person. Because if we just read his books, he may seem like a, you know, some kind of an intellectual person, like who's explaining things very nicely. But when we actually understand his life, and how he has lived his life, and how he has gone through, you know, the different challenges in life, how he's gone through setting up this entire Hare Krishna movement, what was the purpose of his life, how he followed his guru's order, how he, you know, encouraged so many people, you know, just reading his conversations, reading his interactions with so many people. It really, you know, strengthens our faith in then when we are reading his books also, because we see that this is a person in action. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, you know, we want to encourage all of you to read. So whatever we are presenting today is based on the translations and purports given by Srila Prabhupada from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to present, because we want to glorify Srila Prabhupada for all that we have received from him. So we'll start with a story. So in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this nice story of, I mean, I like the drama, like, you know, there's so such a nice and so many things to learn from the sixth canto. And, you know, also showing the protection of the Lord. So in the sixth canto, there is this Maharaj Chitraketu. And he marries, you know, he's a Kshatriya, he's a king, very big king. And he has a wife, and he tries to have a child, cannot have a child. He has another wife, tries to have a child, does not have a child. Another wife, tries to have a child, does not have a wife. Like that, he marries 10,000 wives, and he doesn't have a child. And in spite of having such esteemed rule and such esteemed, you know, all the kings are subordinate to him, and all the wealth and, you know, so much respect. You know, you have, one thing is to have wealth, but another thing is to also have respect of the, you know, your subordinates and the kingdom. So he has that also. But he's not happy. And what is he not happy with?
Because he doesn't have a son.
He doesn't have a son. It's like, you know, you have a nice, able, beautiful body, but there's a thorn in your foot. And that thorn in the foot is just occupying maybe like 1/8 of an inch or 1/8 of a centimeter, I don't know how much, like, you know, like 1 millimeter or less in your foot, in needle poke. And, you know, and the rest of your body is getting spa treatment. You know, getting a nice massage and everything. But you're not able to relish all of that that's happening in the other parts of your body, like, you know, getting nice massage and sauna and everything, because there is this thorn in the foot. So Chitraketu, in spite of having everything, he had this desire to have a son. And why? Because the son will continue his kingdom. The son will do the oblations to him, you know, when he dies. And, you know, it's important for a Kshatriya to have a son. And, you know, he had all these conceptions. So he marries 10,000 queens. Just imagine the amount of time he must have spent in just marrying so many queens. So, you know, he's marrying so many people. Now, the point is, his sense of worth is coming from the fact of whether he has a son or not. Right? And because he doesn't have that son, you know, everything else that is giving him a sense of worth that probably would have been his need earlier, it does not matter. You know, the sense of worth is not being satisfied. He feels worthless. He feels useless. Right? And he's telling, as a person, this is what Chitraketu says, as a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by the external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp. I am not pleased with my empire, opulence or possessions, which are desirable even for great demigods, because I have no son. So now someone may think that, okay, you know, if I had a house and if I had a palace and if I had, you know, all of these things, you know, that even the demigods don't have, then maybe I'll be a happy person. But here you see someone who has all of that, and he's not happy because he doesn't have a son. So this is the material nature. Always there'll be something that will, you know, poke you like that needle. And the more you identify with that, the more you're going to, the more you focus on that, the more you'll feel hurt by it, right? So now, to add to the drama, we see in the next slide, what happens is Chitraketu is like inconsolable. So Narad Muni and Angira Rishi come to him. They try to console him, try to give him some good sense. You know, hey, you know, this is not, you know, the goal of your life and everything. And actually Chitraketu is a devotee of the Lord. And all the queens he married were also wonderful Vaishnavis. Mm-hmm. You know, it was in a Krishna conscious culture. So Narad Muni and Angira Rishi try to explain to him, but he does not agree. Then they say, okay, we'll perform a yajna. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after that yajna, then, you know, there is some, you know, you will have a son. So, you know, he agrees. So because Narad, does that mean Narad Muni and Angira Rishi think that having a son is so important? No, they see that this living entity is not able to think about anything else. Okay, let's, you know, do this, and then, you know, so he can move forward in his life. But they also tell him that the son will be a cause of happiness and distress, and his name will be Harsha Shoka. Right? So Chitraketu says, okay. He forgets that part. So he does a sacrifice, big sacrifice, and he has a son. Now he cannot have son from all 10,000 queens. So he has only, he's granted the boon to have one son. Now all 10,000 queens cannot produce one son. So only one queen is Kritya Dyuti. Through her, he has a son. Now, because he wanted a son so badly, Chitraketu goes crazy about that son. And naturally the son is going to be with the mother. So what happens is, he's always in that queen's palace. Always with the son, always going to her, meeting her, and then he thinks she gave the son, so he has extra affection for her. Now, what happens to the other queens is that they start feeling neglected and they start feeling unhappy, right? Now, and they feel very terrible, and they feel like as if they made, you know, they committed some sin, or they are some lesser human beings because they were not able to have a son, and that queen had a son. So here Chitraketu's sense of worth was coming from the fact of whether he's going to have someone, you know, to take his generation forward. And but these other queens who didn't have a son, their sense of worth was coming from the fact of, oh, I could not have a son. And oh, my husband is neglecting me. He's not paying attention to me. Right? Now, because that sense of worth from where they're getting their self-worth is not getting satisfied, they do something extremely very intelligent. They poison that boy. So what they do, they go and they make sure they kill the boy, right?
All the other queens. Okay.
They go and kill that boy. They give him poison, mm-hmm. right? So they think that, okay, now if this boy is not there, then everything will be back to what Chitraketu used to be with us before, and he will not give special attention to her, and he will give special attention to us. Now, do you think those ladies were really bad people? Of course, they... Where did their bad qualities come from? They came from the fact of they really needed that sense of worth from affection coming from the husband and having a son so that they could get the king's affection also, that when that was not satisfied, in order to achieve that sense of worth through that, to get that, they go and do this particular action, right? So we see here, like, you know, they are grieving, they are saying this, that as their envy increased, like, you know, it's explained, Maitreya Rishi is explaining, this is a conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura. So Maitreya Rishi is telling the story to Vidura, and he's telling, as their envy increased, they lost their intelligence, and being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Now what happened to Chitraketu?
He died.
So they got their sense of self-worth. That boy is not there, okay, now, you know, there is hope that Chitraketu will, you know, love us and take care of us, and that queen will not get special affection. Chitraketu goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He is not able to focus on anything. He is lamenting so much and he is crying so much, and, you know, he is just out of his senses. He is not able to take care of the palace. He is not able to take care of his duties. And all the time he is just lamenting and crying, and the queen is also crying, and they are feeling so sad, right? So when they are feeling so sad and Chitraketu is by the bedside of the sun, then again Narad Muni and Angira Rishi come. Okay, we told you, he will be the cause of your happiness and distress. He is Harsha Shoka. So then this, you know, Chitraketu is like, you know, so sad. And then Narad Muni and Angira Rishi try to give him medicine. See, they gave him medicine before, but he was so much attached, he couldn't take it. But now he was in that situation, he got some medicine, and they said, oh, you're so attached to this son. Okay, you know, this boy still has some karma left, and he still has some lifetime left. We will ask him to come back. So then they ask, the soul enters the boy's body again, and the boy becomes awake, as you can see in this slide. And then the boy is awake, and then the boy starts preaching to the father, like, you know, he's saying, why should I accept them as my mother and father? Which lifetime have they been my mother and father? I have gone through so many lifetimes, had so many mothers and so many fathers. I don't want to get entangled in all this. I want to go back home, you know. I want to complete the purpose of my spiritual life. The purpose of my life is not, you know, having a relationship as a mother or a father or a son or all of these things. But the purpose of my life is to worship the Lord and to go back to Him. So that's what I want to complete. So please, I want to go back. I don't want to be here. And then he goes away. So Chitraketu is like trying to wait, you know, stop. And then he, you know, he says, like, Chitraketu is losing his balance, as we see. And then Chitraketu is advised by his son. So before the son leaves again, he says this very wonderful verse, 6th canto, 16th chapter, text 11. And he says, the Supreme Lord, Atma, the creator of cause and effect, does not accept the happiness and distress that result from fruitive actions. He is completely independent of having to accept a material body. And because he has no material body, he is always neutral. So he's telling, basically in simple language, he's telling that the Lord is completely spiritual. He doesn't have this material body like us. He doesn't take birth like us. And he is not affected by the happiness and distress that come which is based on this body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he says, the living entities who are also part and parcel of the Lord also possess the same quality, but in a minute quantity. Therefore, we should not be affected by lamentation. So basically, he is telling, just like the Lord is transcendental to this body and the identification of the body and all this material nature, he is not affected by it because he is completely spiritual. But because we are spiritual, we are also spiritual. We are also his part and parcel. But we get entangled because of the material body, we get a little bewildered. You know, because we get bewildered by the material energy. We are marginal, so we want to enjoy using the body. We get a little bewildered like that. So he's telling, no, but why should we lament? Because we are also spiritual. So then he gives that knowledge to Chitraketu. And then Chitraketu understands, you know, what is going on. That, you know, this was my mistake. And this is where I was trying to, you know, I had everything, but I spoiled everything. Just because my sense of worth had to come from the son, I did this whole thing and neglected the other wives. And then the other women also, they were lamenting that they did some activity like that, right? Because
mm-hmm.
that was educational for everyone, what that boy was speaking. And then they also realized that, you know, hey, my sense of worth is coming from this wrong place. I am actually spirit soul part and parcel of Krishna. So why should I, you know, do all of these kind of activities? You know, it's all coming from this conception that I am this body. So I'm trying to get a sense of worth from this body and the field,
relationships
and the field of activity that comes from the body. So then they also realize that thing, right? So you know, so then Chitraketu, if you read further in the story, that the next 5-6 verses, the story goes on till 7th, you know, other cantos also. not yeah, sixth canto only. He says, so basically then he devotes his time to really, you know, going back to all the spiritual knowledge that he had learnt, reviving his consciousness, you know, living aloof in that sense. He used to do all his duties, but he was not entangled in those things. He was not identifying with, you know, I am the king, I am this, I am that. You know, he was like, oh, I am spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. My duty is to serve him right now as a king and as a husband, so I'm going to do that. And then he finally goes back home, back to Godhead. So that's the perfection that he achieves, right? So when he comes to the right conception of who he is and he's getting his sense of worth from the right place, which is I am spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, then he's able to make progress. Then he's not affected by so many of these things. Otherwise, see, for satisfying that desire of getting a sense of worth, he made so many mistakes, those wives made so many mistakes and so much devastation, and they were, you know, they were thrown away in their spiritual lives, right, for some time. But then again, the spiritual masters came and they gave the right knowledge, and then they were able to make progress. So some nice stories to understand. Another story we can say is Gandhari. So when she heard that Kunti Devi had delivered a nice golden boy, Yudhishthir, and she was having a long pregnancy, like more than a year or more than a year and a half. So then she gets so envious because it's competition, right? Who's going to have the baby first? Whose son will be the king? Who will get the throne, right? Whether it's Kunti's son or my son. So that means the firstborn will get some conception she has, right? She gets so angry, she hits the womb. And then a iron ball type of flesh ball comes out. And then, you know, when... who is the rishi? Vyasadeva comes. And she tells him, you gave me a boon, I'll have 100 sons. But look what happened, you know? And Kunti already had son. Look what happened. He said, no, my boon will never go waste. And then he does the first test tube babies. Mm-hmm. Right, 100 of them come. But because she bought that one thing, Gandhari is actually praised in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Tapaswini. She's called as a very austere and a chaste lady. And her austerity is actually the chastity that she follows towards Dhritarashtra. Right? She's blindfolding herself and all. So that is a woman's tapasya, to do her role properly. You know, what austerities the brahmacharis do towards, you know, serving their guru. A woman does those austerities by properly serving the husband and doing her duties at home. Right? So she is actually known as a tapaswini, but at one moment of anger and envy, she gives birth to envy personified. Right? So her sense of worth was coming from what? Whether my son will be the king. Whether my son will be elder than I had the son first. And whether my son will be the firstborn. He'll be the elder one, like that, right? Then I will have some, you know, some kind of, you know, position in society because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then you see how you get entangled in one moment of, you know, you're not attentive to what you're thinking and how you're acting. Look at the destruction that can get. But actually see, if you also look at the other side of Gandhari, her sense of worth was not like whether I can see or not. Her sense of worth was, I just have to be a chaste wife. Right? So she was such a great lady. But this one attachment and one wrong conception of yourself can really bring you down. Like you can see. Then also there are other contemporary examples. You all would have heard of Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston used to be like this big singer. She was 48 years old when she died. Her song is there that nobody can sing. Even if they try to sing, you will always remember how Whitney Houston used to sing that song. And a very popular singer. She was found dead in a bath, in her bathtub. She was like sunk in the bathtub.
Her daughter, right?
First, Whitney Houston. She died in the bathtub. And it was because, then they later figured out it was because of some cocaine and all that drug overuse, right? And she left behind an estate of 135 million for her daughter. But her daughter was so disturbed and depressed that she was also taking a lot of drugs. And then a few months later, she was also found dead in a bathtub. So she had all the money, Whitney Houston. She had all the name, all the fame, all the prestige. She had the best in life, but she didn't have that inner fulfillment. Her sense of worth was coming from a lot of external things. And she had it also. It was not that the money was gone away from her. She still had it, but that happiness did not come from that. Right, and the daughter also, she lost her mother and she was also on drugs. Why do people take drugs? They have to just, you know, dumb down the noise that is coming inside, the pain that they're feeling inside, the loneliness, the lack of connection, the lack of, you know, worth that they're feeling, right? So lack of relationships, lack of love, lack of all of these things, you know, there's a basic needs we have. and we try to satisfy them in the material realm, and it doesn't get satisfied. So, like we can see, you know, Chitraketu had everything, he didn't have a son. Gandhari wanted to be the first one to have a son. Then here, Whitney Houston had all the wealth and everything that you could go for, but she didn't have inner fulfillment and happiness, right? And she did it. And then her daughter also killed herself. And then Jimi Hendrix used to be a great singer in the 60s. And he died of drug overdose, like overdose of sleeping pills at the age of 27. He was like at the top of the world charts. Like a really popular guy. But he died, and I think he was from Seattle. And he died of drug, like overdose of sleeping pills. And why? That's what Wikipedia says. Insecurities about his personal relationships and disillusionment with the music industry contributed to his frustration. You have fan following, you have popularity, you have money, you have a girlfriend, you have everything. But you still commit suicide. Why? All that is not making you happy. Even if initially we tried hard, you know, thinking that if I get this, then, you know, I'll be worthy and, you know, I'll be happy and, you know, people will look up to me and all. You get all of those things, you feel empty actually after that. Because that is not what you're longing for. And we are seeing it through example after example. Here we are seeing they're not satisfied. In the previous examples of this Chitraketu, his wives and Gandhari, we see that they tried to satisfy something in a certain way. Their attempts were frustrated, met with actually devastation. Right? And actually when Duryodhana was born, he was braying like a donkey. And Vidura and all the bad omens were there.
Mm-hmm.
So Vidura advised Dhritarashtra, kill him immediately. He's going to bring you a lot of disgrace. He's going to create a lot of adharma. But Dhritarashtra was so attached, my son. You know, he's going to carry my name forward. He'll become the king and all that. He does not do that. So you see how destruction happens also. One thing is you are feeling empty. Second thing is after having the son or after doing all of these things also, you're not happy, as we are seeing in these examples. And then a lot of destruction is happening. A lot of disturbance is happening. You're destroying others, but you're actually destroying yourself. Right? So basically this should be what is false. What is this false sense of self? And there is a false sense of self and a real sense of self. So we have an identity. So suppose I ask you, which country are you from? You may say India, someone may say USA, someone may say, you know, I'm from France, I'm from Australia, I'm from South Africa, I'm from Chile, I'm from Peru, I'm from Argentina, right? But then suppose you move, like I moved from India to United States of America and I've been here for 11 years and now I have a citizenship. So it's very confusing for me to, when somebody asks me a question, where are you, you know, where are you from? And I really want to say India, but then I'm like, okay, but I'm a citizen of the US, but no, but from my roots, I'm Indian. How do I say that? You know, it's changed. Something has changed about my identity. Right now, suppose someone asks me, you know, what is your status? So previously I was not married, but then now I'm married. So my status has changed. Or, you know, maybe I had a lot of money before and now I don't have any money. Or, you know, different things, these kind, or like, you know, maybe I was, my face didn't have, my hair was all, you know, black and, you know, everything. I didn't have a single strand of white hair, but now I have white hair coming. Or I didn't have a single wrinkle, but now my face looks wrinkled. Or maybe someone was like, you know, a model is very beautiful, but as she's growing old, you know, if her sense of worth is coming from her beauty, then that's going to change. If someone's sense of worth is going to come from the country they belong to, that can change. If someone's sense of worth is going to come from the wealth that they have, that can change. Because these things are all temporary. So they form a part of some description of your identity, but they are not a foundation of your identity. Right? So false pride is when we try to get our sense of worth from these false things. Right? It's like a cat looks into the mirror and thinks she's a lion. Right? But we have to understand fundamentally what is the foundation of our worth, foundation of our self first, and then the worth of the self, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically we are, the understanding that we have been given to by the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, by the Bhagavad Gita and by Srila Prabhupada's teachings, is that we are all spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. What is your size? 6?
1/10,000 or so.
Yeah, 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair, right? But usually if someone asks me my size, I'll say 6, right? But no, that's not my size. My size is not 6. My size is, you know, something so tiny. But the soul is covered by the mind, intelligence and false ego, you know, the subtle body, right? And then based on the subtle body and the type of desires and conceptions and consciousness, we get a gross body, a physical body, right? We've read these things in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Based on whatever type of conception you have, you definitely get that kind of body. Different chapters in the Bhagavad Gita say that, the 8th chapter, the 15th chapter, like that. And based on the body, we have a false identity. So, you know, you're born in a certain family. Now, suppose someone is born in the, which family should we say?
Okay.
Well, let's say Rupert Murdoch's family. Rupert Murdoch is like the Star TV. You know, he's like the owner of, you know, all of that. So, as soon as a child is born, it's like, oh, he's the next heir to the whole Star TV and this whole, you know, enterprise that Rupert Murdoch has created. And, oh, you know, this is the type of family we have. These are the type of values we have. And this, you know, this person has to be a Murdoch boy. And this person, this boy has to, like, you know, he's going to behave like us. And he's going to have so many girlfriends. He's going to have golfing clubs. And he's going to have this. You know, as soon as a child is born, an identity is imposed on that child. Right? Nobody's telling, oh, spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, let us offer him to the lotus feet of Krishna. Right? No, we're not imposing that, you know, we're like not letting the child be in the real identity. We're like imposing so many identities. So based on the type of families we are born in, based on the kind of appearance we have, you know, someone may be belonging to a certain race, like they may be, you know, from the Oriental race or the, you know, the Caucasian race or the Hispanic, you know, Asian, Indian, whatever, you know, different races like that. So, you know, based on the body, the appearance, you are, you know, you develop a certain mindset, identity, you know, people perceive you in a certain way. Right now you see that so much, like as you were mentioning that, you know, anyone who's following Islam is now being very badly treated just because of some misled people in Islam. You know, the other good people, you know, the God-loving and, you know, people, you know, nice people are being mistreated just because they belong to a certain class of people. So that false identity, right? And such a bad way of treating people, because that's really not their identity. Whether they're following Islam or Hinduism or, you know, whatever they're following, they're actually all spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna, whom we know as Krishna and they may know as Allah, like that. But so many things get imposed on us, right? Or the kind of house you live in. I remember I moved from, like, we used to live in a house next to the temple, and then we moved to a condo next to the temple. And I could see, like, when I used to live in the house, I used to feel like, okay, my house has to look good, and, you know, I have to maintain the value of the house, and I have to have these paintings, and I have to have this kind of furniture, because, you know, that's what's happening everywhere. So I kind of, you know, feel like I have to maintain that identity, right? And as soon as I move to the condo, I go back to my original, you know, identity that I grew up in Bombay, in a small flat. And, like, now I start behaving in a totally different way. I don't care, you know, whether the paint has chipped off, or I don't have, like, the best-looking pieces, or my sofa looks a little old and all, you know. The mindset changes like that. Also, based on your job, you feel like, you know, if you work in, if you're working in Microsoft makes you feel like, you know, you're, like, the, you know, the next best thing to humanity, you know, or any company. I don't know how Google treats its people or other companies, you know. You develop an identity based on the company, you know. And then, like, you know, they make you feel, at least in Microsoft at that time, they used to make you feel guilty about using Google search. Like Steve Ballmer used to say, oh, we have so many employees, and then they have, you know, 3 or 4 members in their family. That's about 400,000 people, you know, not using Microsoft products, not using Bing search. This is wrong. And then you start being loyalty to the company and to the country and to the family, and, like, so many things start developing, right? This false identity. Or based on the role we have, right? I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I'm an aunt, or the social status. And you can add more stuff to that. Now, what happens is, all these different things that we've discussed, we already discussed, these things are all temporary. So one day I'm from Guatemala, and the other day I'm in, I'm an American citizen. Like, now you see people who are, you know, they're Syria, this, you know, this war. So now they've, you know, Canada has given a lot of these people asylum. I don't know how many hundred thousand or a few hundred thousands of people came, and the prime minister welcomed them. So now suddenly their identity changes into Canadian citizens, right?
Yeah.
And then they start, you have to change your mindset. You have to change everything in your mindset around that. And also, you know, one day you're a Syrian citizen, one day you're a Canadian citizen, one day you're a rich person, another day you're a poor person, one day you're beautiful, one day you're all wrinkled and shriveled up. And one day you're alive, another day you're dead. In the sense of, you know, in the body, outside the body, and things like that. So, or one day you're intelligent. Like, there was this very nice realization being shared by Her Grace Narayani Mataji. She's a very, very senior disciple, Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, she's one of the few people who've done certain courses within ISKCON, like one of the first women to do those courses, and very, very realized person. And then she was sharing in one lecture that, you know, I mean, of course she isn't like that, but she was just being so humble, and she shared that, I used to be very proud about my memory of remembering shlokas. You know, and that can become your identity, and you can get your sense of worth from that. Of course, not her, but it can affect people like me. And she said, I used to be very proud, and then one time she had an accident, and then when she was in the hospital, she couldn't even remember, like, who she was, and forget about shlokas. And then even when she got a little bit of her memory back, she couldn't remember so many things, you know, so many shlokas and so many other things. And then she said, you know, that's when I realized, you know, I am not these shlokas. I am not, my sense of worth is not this. And if I have these possessions, it's also Krishna's grace on me. Like that. So, but because she was situated rightly, she's such an advanced devotee, it doesn't impact her. Like the humility is there when she knows that's what her real identity is. But if we are not situated in that sense, and if people don't have spiritual knowledge, don't understand who they really are, they keep believing that they are all of those things, that false identity. They don't know their spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. So the sense of self keeps bouncing up and down like a ping pong ball. It keeps going up and down. So one day you got a promotion in Microsoft or at any place you work, whether as at your Montessori school or Costco where you work, or, you know, other people work at other places. So one day you're like, oh, I'm like the star, you know, like you get an award in the company that you did a very good job. And like the next day somebody else gets an award, and, you know, people stop giving their importance to you. And people start treating the other person special, just like Chitraketu started treating that one wife special, right? So naturally then you, because your sense of worth is all, you know, external, mm-hmm. based on these external things, you tend to be happy and distressed, right? But we don't want to do that because we keep getting entangled in that mess. Like the spider in the web, right? Not the spider in the web, the prey that the spider is trying to catch, the insect, right? So then, you know, people, you can get entangled in that. Then, you know, all your life can become about satisfying your sense of worth or getting your sense of worth from these outside things, and you keep forgetting Krishna, right? So what happens is our real identity is that we are spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. And we are in this material world because we rebelled and we wanted to be our individual controller, proprietor, enjoyer. And we wanted to be here. So Krishna said, go for it. And while we're going for it, we're just getting more and more entangled into it, right? So it's very important first to understand sense of self-worth. It's first important to understand what is the right understanding of the sense of self, right? So who am I? Self, who am I? Myself, who am I? I am not these cars and I'm not these jewelry and these diamonds and these looks and these things. You know, I'm spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. And what is my worth?
Relationship with Krishna.
Yes, my worth is in relationship with Krishna. Krishna loves me unconditionally. And to the extent I reciprocate with Krishna's love, to that extent I will automatically start feeling worthy because of, again, experiencing Krishna's reciprocation. Because so far I'm not touching Krishna, I'm not trying to go to Krishna, so I'm not able to understand how much Krishna loves me. But when I try to start contacting Krishna, then I can feel his love and relationship. Right? It's like you're sitting in a room with 10 people, you don't interact with anyone, you don't understand how loving and caring they are. But when you start interacting with them, then you realize how compassionate and loving and caring people are around us, right? It's the same way Krishna is with us, but, you know, we're not trying to access him. We're not trying to tap him. So the more we do that, the more we understand. We're able to understand how much Krishna values us. And a lot of times, or actually all the time, we are trying to satisfy our need of unconditional love and acceptance through the material realm. So by trying to get a car, we get some, you know, we all need some social acceptance. We all need some appreciation. You know, it's a basic human need. But the strategy we are employing to satisfy those needs are not healthy, because we're trying to satisfy those needs through a temporary means. And if you keep continuing satisfying it through the temporary means, as we already discussed, we're going to one day be up, one day be down, one day be happy, one day be confused. But we all have this need to be accepted and appreciated and loved. So we want to satisfy that need. It's a genuine need of the soul. You satisfy that need in Krishna, through Krishna, in relationship with Krishna, and in relationship with his devotees, right? So now we will see, we saw some difficult, like, you know, people who didn't do a very good job of, you know, managing their sense of worth and knowing their sense of worth. But now we'll see some examples of, you know, from Shastra and contemporary life. People who went through the same challenges, actually, similar challenges as these people we talked about. But how they maintain their sense of worth in relationship to Krishna, and how they were able to follow their values and continue getting inner fulfillment. See, if Gandhari acted in that way, or if Chitraketu acted in that way, or his queens acted in that way, they were not feeling fulfilled inside. And definitely we saw in the example of Whitney Houston and her daughter and Jimi Hendrix. They were not feeling fulfilled inside. But now we're going to see people with the same challenges, but they acted from this place, that from the real sense of self. So then their sense of worth also came from that sense of self in relationship to Krishna, as you very nicely said. Anyway, we'll get to this slide at the end also. So here we have Pingala. And Pingala is described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the song of the 24 gurus of the Avadhut Brahman. So there's this Avadhut who's roaming around. Mm-hmm. And then he explains who his 24 gurus are to a visiting king. And one of his gurus is Pingala, the prostitute. And Pingala was a prostitute, and her job was to, you know, attract men and, you know, help them enjoy in ways in which they wanted. And she would get something out of it. She would get something for her maintenance out of that. So one particular night she kept waiting. She was nicely dressed, a beautiful lady. Nicely dressed, and she kept waiting outside, you know, on the street, walking up and down in the street in the night, you know, waiting for a customer. And she tried to attract a lot of people. Nobody stopped by. But actually, she was waiting for this one special person whom she really loved. And she was waiting for her lover, but he didn't turn up. And what happened is that because she was hankering for it so much, in that hankering, a great deal of frustration came, because that desire was not satisfied. And sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced it, but sometimes when certain desires of yours are really frustrated,
yeah,
like you try very hard for something and you keep persisting and you keep explaining and you keep, you know, doing, and then you keep doing it for a long period of time, and Krishna's like, sorry, no, 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 right? We don't see Krishna's hand in that, but when we see these, you know, these people not responding to us in a certain way and we get like totally frustrated, that time you really feel detached. Have you experienced that?
Yeah.
You have? Then you realize, this is causing me so much pain. No, I need to go back to Krishna. This is what Krishna said, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. And, you know, my fulfillment of what I'm looking for is only going to come from relationship with Krishna. Right? Right? So Pingala experiences something similar. And she says some very beautiful, she says some very beautiful lines. And what she especially says in text 31 is very beautiful. And she says, I'm such a fool that I have given up the service of that person who, being eternally situated within my heart, is actually most dear to me. That most dear one is the Lord of the universe, who is the bestower of real love and happiness and the source of all prosperity. Although he is in my own heart, I have completely neglected him. Instead, I have ignorantly served insignificant men who can never satisfy my real desires, and who have simply brought me unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion. So she was trying to get her sense of worth from having a boyfriend, right? Or, you know, not being single. Krishna says, no, no, you're not going to get. And then when she gets frustrated, she realizes that, no, why am I, you know, going after these people? And, you know, I should just think about Krishna and, you know, pray to Krishna and surrender to him. And And like when she had spent the whole night pacing around the street, when she gets this immediate realization, she goes on her bed and takes rest. So it shows that, you know, how peaceful and happy she is once she gets her sense of worth from the right place, you know, in relationship to Krishna. And that's actually written in Srimad Bhagavatam, that she goes and takes, you know, she goes and sits on her bed and, you know, she's ready to take rest. So you see that she got her sense of worth from the right place, so then she was able to act properly,
mm-hmm.
right? And she was also, what was another result was she was happy and peaceful. She was not anxious and she was not distressed and she was not hankering. She was just so happy, you know, in this realization. And then she also thinks that I must have done something good in my life that Krishna has given this realization to me. She feels very happy and blessed that she got this realization. So another beautiful lady is Vindhyavali. There's only one line she speaks in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one line by her, but most powerful. And she is Bali Maharaj's wife. So Vamandev asks for 3 steps of land from
mm-hmm.
Bali Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
And Bali Maharaj is the king of the Daityas. But his another qualification is also Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. Prahlad Maharaj, the great devotee of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Bali Maharaj is Prahlad Maharaj's grandson actually. But he's still the king of the Daityas, right? Hiranyakashipu's lineage is continuing. So he had some good qualities because of being grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Okay? Now, Bali Maharaj, you know, he told Vamandev he'll give him 3 steps of land. So you know how Vamandev tricks him. And Vamandev is Lord Vishnu, right? So Vamandev takes the first step, takes the entire planet, right?
Yeah.
The earth planet. And I think the second one, he covers all the entire universe. No, I think the first one, he covers the universe. The second one, he goes beyond the universe.
Mm.
And then he's like, I covered everything. Now, where do I put my 3rd step? So then Bali Maharaj gets some realization. And then he says, okay, I'll offer my head to you. So Bali Maharaj, and then Bali Maharaj offers his head. And then Vamandev ties him up in ropes and everything. Because they have to curtail the Daityas who are becoming very powerful over the demons, the demigods.
Mm-hmm.
And then if this is not, you know, sometimes people say, oh, the Lord is partial, you know, he always comes and plays some trick with the Daityas and then he allows the demigods to have an easy ride. No, that's not the point. The demigods are responsible for the working of the universe. And they are also assisting the Lord in keeping dharma and everything, things in balance. Right? Now, if they are weakened, then all the religious principles and all the potential of the human beings of ever trying to come to Krishna consciousness will go away, because there are demons rule and there will be more demoniac people. So that's why the Lord is helping. And so Bali Maharaj is right now captured, and Vamandev, you can see, is sitting on his throne, and his head is down. And Bali Maharaj's wife, see, she was the wife of a very powerful man who had so much wealth and who had so much power and so much name and fame, and you know, he had like influence. People were, you know, the king. So many people subordinate to him. In fact, the demigods are also defeated by him, right? So what a powerful man's wife. Just imagine if some lady like that in contemporary world loses all her power. Her husband loses the entire empire and loses everything. Everything. Even his own body he has surrendered now. He's become a servant actually. How could a regular woman feel when her sense of worth is coming from all of those things? Now, those things are not with her. How could a regular woman feel?
She would feel like quitting her husband.
Yeah. Right? It's not till death do us apart. Till money is there, we are together. Till money is not there, we are apart. Right? Till money, fame, name. My needs are not satisfied, I'm apart. But she's not going away from him. She's staying with him. But on the other hand, she's telling, very good. I'm very happy this is happening, because he had become too proud of all of his possessions. And he didn't actually have, he was not the owner of anything. But he thought he was the owner of everything. And now he's so foolish that he thinks even this body is his, that he's offering it to Krishna. Like that. Actually he possesses nothing. How arrogant he is. That's what she's telling. Bali Maharaj's wife, who was most intelligent, supported the arrest of her husband and accused him of having no intelligence, because he had claimed proprietorship of the property of the Lord. So who is he to give the land? That is, the land is of the Lord anyway. And who is he to even give his body? Right?
Yeah, we have nothing to lose.
You know, he's being so arrogant, she's telling. So I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Let him lose everything that he thinks it is his, and then he will be set right. Now, for the woman, this woman to be married to such a powerful man who had so much power and name and fame, and when that husband loses everything, because her sense of worth is not coming from all of those things. Her sense of worth is coming from a deeper point, from the real foundation that we discussed, that I am spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Right? It's coming from that. So even if everything else is taken away, she's not attached to it. That's not where her worth is coming from. Her worth is coming from following the dharma, following what is pleasing to Krishna. Right? So she's doing, why is she thinking like this? Because that is pleasing to Krishna. Right? It's not my value, this is my value. No, what is our value? Our value has to be what is pleasing to Krishna. And by following that, that is where her sense of worth is coming from. So when we follow Krishna's instructions, that means we are being his servant. Right? That is our sense of worth. A powerful example, right?
Yeah. She has the right consciousness, I mean.
Yes.
Even after living with, you know, somebody who is so materially identified and not leaving him in spite of, you know, if he's at a lower conscious level, she's still with him and trying to help him.
Yeah. So we've done this small presentation, you all can watch on YouTube. Vindhyavali, her wifehood versus the consumer culture of marriage. We have a 5-minute presentation on the YouTube channel. You can watch. We used to do these last year.
Okay.
Now we're not doing any more of these. So another example, as we covered the examples where they didn't have the right sense of worth coming from the right place, we're coming few examples now of people, you know, being properly situated in their sense of worth. So here Draupadi, she was humiliated, like terribly humiliated. Right? When her Vastraharan happened. She was pulled by the hair by her brother-in-law. She was in her menstrual cycle. She was living in the separate quarters, and she was wearing only one piece of cloth. She was actually the most beautiful woman. But she was not. She was very dressed very simply. And she was only in one piece of cloth. Everyone knew she was in her menstrual cycle, and everyone knew she was in the separate place. And then a maid servant came to call her. That means even the servants of the palace knew what humiliation she was going to go through, right? And then she was pulled by the hair by her own brother-in-law, and she was pulled in that assembly. So the lady with 5 husbands, nobody got up to help her, right? All the elders of the Kuru dynasty were sitting, nobody got up. She pleaded with the king, she spoke from the principles of dharma that this is wrong. The king did nothing. And not only that, she was also called as a prostitute because she had 5 husbands. Right? Imagine the amount of stigma she was already living with and what she was going through at that point of time. Right? Her husbands had lost everything. She had lost everything. See, in Vindhyavali's case, at least her, you know, chastity as a woman, her integrity as a woman was still with her. Nobody had challenged that. In Draupadi's case, her husbands had lost everything. And her own position as a woman, chastity as a woman, purity as a woman, status as a woman, respect as a woman was all being taken away from her, right? How can a person live after being treated like this? A lot of people commit suicide.
And she lived with her husbands who did not help her.
Exactly. She also lived with her husbands and she served them very nicely. She did her dharma properly, right?
I never thought of that point that she lived with her. Those husbands who didn't help her, right in front of them this happened. I didn't think of that point that she still served them after that.
Yes, she still served those husbands. Why? How could she do that?
I was thinking like in our life, if you have a choo-choo, little choo-choo with a husband and like, you know.
I won't cook. I won't cook today. I won't pack your lunch. Right? Something small. They don't talk nicely to us, or they don't appreciate something we have done, or they don't protect us from, you know, some insult, some small thing some family member or in-law said, or anybody, you know. Some of us don't have husbands.
Yeah.
So you can imagine friends, you can imagine family members, brothers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the way she was serving them, we discussed it on Thursday in the call. She was serving them like a maid servant, even when they, you know, got everything back also. She was serving them like a maid servant. She was the first one to wake up and the last one to sleep. That means she was up and ready. She had kept everything ready before her husbands would wake up. And only after they would sleep and she would make sure they were all resting comfortably that she would go to sleep. And during the whole day she was personally cooking and everything in spite of being such a big queen and having so many maid servants and so many things. But husband service she did personally. Now how was she able to serve those husbands one thing and even just live life?
Yeah.
Right? How was she able to do it? Her sense of self-worth, the way we understand it right now, my prestige, my name, fame, wealth, honor, respect, relationship, right? Everything is gone. All those things are gone. But from where we get our sense of worth, she doesn't even have any of those things. But how is she living? What? Where is her foundation of sense of worth coming from? I'm spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. My duty is to serve him. So he has given me this woman's dharma. He has given me this particular body. He has given me this particular role and he expects me to behave in this way, so I'm going to continue behaving in this way. And whatever has been set up has happened under his direction, so I'm going to continue serving him also. I'm not going to say, hey, you did this to me, no. So,
to Krishna also, she will not say. That's
yeah, she won't like.
You will not blame anybody.
Yeah, like, hey, Krishna, you were my friend, what is this? I thought you were a friend, you know, you control everything. Why you could not control this? And then what does she do? See, you just think about how mentally disturbing this thing can be. Just think about the assembly she was in, the arena thing she was in. How many emotions she must be going through. Right? If my sense of worth is challenged, I'll be revolting. I can't think of Krishna at that time. But because she's properly situated, she's able to lift her hands and say, hey Govinda, and then Krishna protects her. Right? Krishna protects her. So that is what we have to get our sense of worth from our relationship with Krishna. Then we can think properly in an adverse situation also. Otherwise, we will be so bewildered. You know, if we are getting our sense of worth from these externals, when they are going away, we will be so bewildered and disturbed. Right? Have you, when we associate with devotees closely, we realize that, you know, what would have impacted me in such a big way? I don't see this devotee getting impacted like that in the same situation. Right? Sometimes you see a devotee is in a particular situation and you see them being very peaceful. Because that's not where their sense of worth is coming from. So that's why they are peaceful, because they're not attached to that. So we have to follow these great ladies. Right? And then Suniti. Suniti is Dhruva Maharaj's mother. She was the second wife of King Uttanapada. And between Suniti and Uttanapada, they had a son, Dhruv Maharaj. And Uttanapada had a second wife, very attracted to her, Suruchi. She was the first wife. Suruchi was the second wife. And King Uttana, one thing is, it must be such a heartbreaking thing to have another, you know, co-wife to deal with. You know, your husband has another wife. That itself is terribly shaking another woman, and then your husband favors that new wife over you. That can be even more terrible. And the husband is favoring that wife, and that wife is acting very arrogantly, not being compassionate to you, not being loving towards you, not understanding your pain. Can be even more devastating, right? And so her son tried to get onto the lap of the father, Dhruv Maharaj. And then Suruchi got really upset because Suruchi's son was sitting on the lap. So Dhruv Maharaj said, I also want to sit. He's my father also. So he went and sat. And then Suruchi, you can see in this picture, she's saying, hey, out. For that, you have to take birth from my womb next life. Next life, it is possible for you. Only after you take, so I am so special. And what hurts Dhruv Maharaj is, my father didn't say anything. He can, as a 5-year-old boy, he can understand that, okay, mother is this, stepmother is like this. But what hurts him really bad is my father didn't say anything. He didn't stop her. He allowed me to get down and go away. So Dhruv Maharaj's sense of worth is very disturbed. Very angry. Like really angry, enraged. You know, he's a Kshatriya. A 5-year-old boy also has a lot of emotion. And then he goes to his mother, Suniti. So Suniti has already heard this happened through the palace maid servants and everyone. And Suniti is crying. She's feeling very sad for what her son is going through. Right? And she first, that's something we'll discuss on Tuesday in the motherhood section of the homemaking and womanhood thing. She first makes the boy sit down. She pacifies him nicely. So she gives him, physically she pacifies him. Emotionally she reflects his feelings. And then she gives him the, once he is pacified and he expresses his desire, he says, I want a kingdom greater than my father, and then who can stop me from sitting on his lap or doing whatever. And then she guides him very nicely. She tells him, you know, whatever you want, you should pray to the Lord for that. So it is better you pray to the Lord. And we should not have bad feelings against other people. Don't have bad feelings towards your stepmother, because whatever is happening by Krishna's arrangement. See, otherwise, nowadays what happens? If the child is upset and the father did something, the mother will use that opportunity to tell the child how bad the father is. Right? No, Papa is like this only. He does, you know, daddy is like this. You know, your dad is like this. And, you know, this is what he does. He treats me like this. And see, he is attracted to that other woman. They start imposing their emotional problems and, you know, want the child to take responsibility of helping you out of the problems. Right? People do that. Right? And she didn't do any of that. She knew my husband likes that other woman more. But she, what guidance is she herself following? You know, we have to worship the Lord. What guidance she gave her son? You have to worship the Lord. Okay, you want this, you worship the Lord. And she gives him a very intelligent guidance. The way, why she can do that is because she herself is following it. And that's why she's able to be stable. If she herself was not following it, she would go and fight. Hey, come on, let's fight in the palace.
Yeah.
I want division. I want my son, you know, to have this much land and, you know, this much part of the kingdom and, you know, all of these things. I am sick. I can't handle this. But her sense of worth is not coming from whether she is the primary queen or whether her husband favors her or whether she has the control over the kingdom. See, you saw Gandhari. She wanted that kingdom, wanted the firstborn son, wanted that competition. She wanted to win in that. But this one doesn't care. See, it doesn't mean we don't go through emotions. Like you can see, Suniti is hurt. She's crying. She's feeling sad for her child. You know, as you know, because we are connected with these bodies, we will have emotions. Right? What is important is where are we acting from? Are we acting from the false sense of self? I'm this body and I'm all of these, you know, paraphernalia. Or from the real sense of self? So Suniti went through all these emotions, but she gave the right guidance. That is important. Right? And then what do you see? That Dhruva, she gives the same values to her son, and then Dhruva goes through meditation for 6 months. Narad Muni gives him instructions, and then he goes through, you know, but his meditation is all about, I want a kingdom greater than my father. But through meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he eventually, at the end of the meditation, when the Lord is pleased with him, when the Lord comes before him, the Lord is very happy with him. And the Lord is ready to give him the benediction he wants. But Dhruva Maharaj, just by meditating on the Lord, is purified. Even his sense of worth is not coming from the kingdom. But because he meditated with that desire, the Lord has to fulfill that desire also. So then the Lord gives him that, you know, gives him the pole star. Right? And that planet will never get affected, even at the time of dissolution. It's a permanent place. But then Dhruva Maharaj is lamenting. Because his sense of self-worth has shifted. It's not coming from that kingdom. It's not coming from whether his stepmother respects him or not, or whether his father gives him the due position in his life or not. Right? He wanted that kingdom so that he gets those things. But his sense of worth has shifted. Right? And he says, alas, just look at me. I am so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can immediately cut the chain of repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I prayed for things which are perishable. Of course, the Lord gave him such a planet that, you know, will never, like, you know, is going to remain spiritual. But you can see, he's like, I wanted that kingdom to enjoy and to prove, you know, I'm great. And then he says, because of my state of complete foolishness and paucity of pious activities, although the Lord offered me his personal service, I wanted material name, fame and prosperity. My case is just like that of the poor man, who, when he satisfied a great emperor who wanted to give him anything he might ask, out of ignorance asked only for a few broken grains of husked rice. Right? So you are with a multi-millionaire and you say, hey, do you have a $10 bill? So that's what how we do, you know. We ask for, like, yes?
I like this last part. Like, you have the emperor in front of you and you are just asking for the husked rice. Right?
Swamiji, can't you think, like, God is our friend. He is the only person we will ask for. If small thing, big thing, he is the only one friend. And is it bad to ask for anything?
No, it's not bad, right? This Dhruva Maharaj is being described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Akama Sarva Kamova, Moksha Kama Udharadi, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purushamparam. So, Akama Sarva Kamova, whether you have no material desires or you are full of material desires, the best path is one who is broad-minded. The best path is to worship the Supreme Personality of God. So, it's not bad. We are worshipping the Supreme Lord, we are asking Him for these things. And then the Lord is, what the Lord does is, He purifies our desire. And He gives that thing to us also. So even if we get it, we will use it in the Lord's service. We will not use it for personal sense gratification. So it is not wrong. We should approach the Lord only.
Because, yeah, so like I'm having pain in my body, I pray to my God, please make this pain go away.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
No, but why are you praying for that? So that you can take care of your child nicely. So that you can do your duties nicely.
Okay.
So that you can do your bhakti nicely, right? It is connected.
Connect everything.
Yeah, it's not that you are going, you know, going to go out for scuba diving and mountain diving or what, I don't know what all exists, you know, to achieve that. You're, you know, why are you praying? You're praying so that you can continue your Krishna consciousness. Then it is bona fide.
Yeah.
Right? So here, see, Dhruv Maharaj's sense of worth shifts. And mother helps him. Right? Mother gives, because she is properly situated, she gives the right guidance to the son because she knows, let him pray to the Lord, he'll get purified. A contemporary example, we have like Wilma Rudolph. Have you heard of her? So since she was born, she had to wear a brace like that in her feet when she started walking. And she had like, you know, legs like this. These are like real pictures, but I didn't get like high-res pictures, like little low-res pictures. And she could never walk. Actually, first she could not even walk. And the doctor said he'll never be able to walk. But she was like very determined. She told her mother in that stage that I am going to run the fastest in this world. I want to do that. And but that did not come from a place of, you know, anger. Why did God this to me or why this thing to me? She just wanted to walk. It's a natural desire for someone to walk and someone to be able to do that, right? But she said, I will pray to God to help me. And because she was determined and because she was praying to the Lord for help, she was, her self-confidence was based on faith in God and her faith in herself, that I have faith in God and I will do, you know, I am determined. And that whether I win or lose, let it be, I am going to try to walk. But she's not, so she's not attached to the result. And who is she depending upon? God, Krishna, right? So from that stage, she became a winner of 3 Olympic medals in running. Gold medals, right? So where was her sense of worth coming from? Could it come from her body, bodily beauty? Right? Her sense of worth came from this fact that I am, you know, God's child and God loves me unconditionally. God will help me. It was not coming from I, you know, science and none of these things, you know, science will help me or this invention will help me or, you know, no. It's coming from Krishna. Like as you said, is it wrong? No, it's not wrong. You pray, but who else will you go to? Right? And then she became such an inspiration, like, you know, even in Krishna temple, we are talking about her, right? We can take such a great service she has done. She became such an inspiration for all the people who were afflicted by disease, other people from her community. She became such an inspiration for, you know, psychologists and, you know, people who are doing motivational talks. They use her example. We are also talking about her. What a service she has done, like that. And then this is Dukhi. Actually, it's not Dukhu, it's Dukhi. So in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, so Lord Chaitanya used to have night-long kirtans in Srivas's house. So Lord Srivas was, is one of the, we say the Panchatattva mantra, right? Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advait, Gadadhar, Srivas, Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. So Srivas is one of the topmost associates. And Srivas is...
She is Radha personified.
That's Gadadhar Pandit.
Gadadhar.
Yeah. But they are all expansions of Lord Vishnu. You know, plenary portions or expansions of Lord Vishnu. And they all come to assist Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes. Right? So when, so Srivas, in Srivas's house, he was a grihastha. And they used to have kirtans in their house 24 hours. And they would not allow other people. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya used to be so much in, you know, ecstasy and thinking about Lord Krishna. If you invite other people, it affects the mood, right? Suppose you are having a nice devotional kirtan and some lady in hot pants and, you know, like, you know, not properly dressed walks in and, you know, it spoils the mood of the place, right? It affects the meditation of these people, and then she is not able to appreciate. She may laugh and commit offenses at the devotees like that. So then, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in such an exalted mood and he is so much ecstasy while they are doing kirtan and they are all trying to remember the Lord, they don't allow anybody else. And maybe some people are allowed. But there is this one lady, very simple village lady. And people actually used to call her Dukhi. She had a nice name, I guess, but they used to call her Dukhi. Dukhi means a miserable lady, right? And what she used to do, she used to bring water from the Ganga and walk to Shiva Sangan, and every day, you know, have enough water for all the devotees, for cooking, bathing, cleaning, washing. And she used to wash the place, and nobody used to notice her. Right? Now someone is washing the pots. Do we go and say, who is washing the pots today? We don't go and check in the temple, right? But we are hearing, oh, someone is washing. We don't go and pay attention, right? Because we only go after like glamorous, you know, high profile and, you know, what's happening and what fun I'm having. So nobody used to notice her. But Lord Chaitanya knew her service. So she was not concerned for any name, fame or recognition. She didn't even care if Lord Chaitanya noticed her or not. She was just happy serving the Lord like this, right? In the background, completely in the background. So none of the devotees knew her, and Lord Chaitanya, she never came in front of him. He never saw her like that, right? So she was not this thing. Her only thing was, I just want to honestly and sincerely assist others in their service to Lord Chaitanya and taking the holy names of the Lord, right? And when the Lord was giving multiple benedictions to everyone, he remembered Dukhi and he called her. He could notice her from the back, like, you know, she was standing somewhere very far away. He called for her. And then he says, and he glorifies her like anything, you know. So the Lord likes this mood of, you know, humility, of being simple, of being in the background and serving very sincerely, right? And because they are really after the service of the Lord. They are not after, hey, you know, you should look at me. Like, you know, when Hari Vilas Prabhu is doing kirtan, you know, then when we are all dancing, we are going in Sankirtan, we all want to stand next to Hari Vilas Prabhu so that he can see we are also, you know, doing something. You know, or if your someone's guru comes, you know, like the gurus when they visit, then, you know, at that time everyone will be very nicely dressed and very alert and, you know, cleaning, and, you know, they'll never do all those menial service, but in front of them they'll do, because we want recognition, right? But that's not,
Jesus also said, like, who's last in the, will be the first in my kingdom or something like that.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. The meek shall inherit the earth.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So the most humble is the one who will enter first in Krishna's place. But we have it reversed in the material world. So we think in spiritual life also we have to go first. Achieve, push everyone away and come in the front. But what is the Lord pleased by? How we are serving others. Lord is very pleased by Dukhi. And then he gives her the name Sukhi. He gives her the name of Sukhi, and she says she's the most happy and the most glorious and auspicious lady. And not only he gives her that name and glorifies her, but he gives her pure love of Krishna. Right? And that is the ultimate perfection of our life, to receive the pure love of Krishna, right? He gives her that, and she achieves the success of her life. Where was she getting her sense of worth from?
Servant of Krishna.
Just want to serve. No recognition, no appreciation, no Facebook tags, no Facebook blaring. You know, I feel so embarrassed sometimes. I keep sharing, here is the recording and here is this. I know it's, I mean, I see a value in it, but it, you know, I feel like, you know, this mood, when will it come? And so, you know, that is the that is her perfection. So, do we need, would any of her, the wealth or any of her, you know, achievements, or if, you know, she would show off every time, you know, hey, see, I'm putting a pot. Did you watch? I did. You know, or she'll just make some special noise so that people come and notice her outside, Lord comes and notice her. Or she's just very happy serving like that, right? And that is, see, her sense of worth is like purely coming from that service. And Krishna notices that and gives her the highest perfection. But our sense of worth is coming from so many things, and we are acting in so many different ways to get those particular things, and we are getting distracted from the goal of life. Right? So we have to learn how to see ourselves from Krishna's point of view. Right? The previous three examples we discussed of Maharaj Chitraketu, I'll tell you the story after class, or of his wives, and also, who did we discuss? Gandhari. Then we discussed Whitney Houston. We discussed Jimi Hendrix. Their sense of worth, they were not seeing themselves from Krishna's point of view. Right? They were not seeing that Krishna loves me unconditionally. They were not seeing themselves like that. They were trying to get their sense of worth by having a son or being first in having a son or in, you know, getting some love and appreciation from the mundane world. And, you know, nobody in the material world is actually capable of fully loving us.
Even without parents also.
Yeah. Yeah, because they have their... actually, the mother's love for the child is considered as a purest. But even they have their limitations, you know, they're limited by distance, limited by their own life, their own, you know, they cannot be Krishna, that they can be taking care of their problems also and taking care of us also. And, you know, they have their own limitations of health and body and, you know, constraints and so many responsibilities and everything, right?
Yeah.
So what was the problem in the previous four cases we discussed? That they were, their sense, they were not seeing themselves from Krishna's point of view, that I am supremely lovable the way I am. Krishna loves me unconditionally. They felt that to get love, they have to get love from this material realm. And nobody in the material realm, nothing in the material realm can satisfy the soul's need for Krishna's love. It's impossible. It's like whatever you put is going to be like a black hole, it cannot satisfy. It's only when Krishna comes and fits in that void, then you feel happy. Right? But the other four examples we discussed, like Draupadi, Vindhyavali, or this Dukhi, or Vilma Rudolph, Sukhi.
Vindhyavali.
No. Pingala.
Pingala, and there were like two queens to one Maharaj, right?
Bali Maharaj wife.
Suruchi and Suniti.
Suniti.
Yeah, so we discussed so many. Where was their sense of, how are they seeing themselves? They were seeing themselves from Krishna's point of view. You know, will Krishna be happy if I do this? Will Krishna be pleased if I do this?
That is a question we should ask in every... doubtful moment, right?
Every moment, not only in every doubtful moment, but every moment.
Yeah, every moment we ask, every doubtful moment we ask. But we have to understand, you know, we get so bewildered by this material energy and our attachments. That time we think, I want to satisfy my desire of getting my sense of worth from these things. We are conditioned. And so we forget Krishna. We forget what is pleasing to Krishna. We get bewildered. You know, the second chapter, text 58 to 62. You are attached to something, lust, anger develops. Then anger, what happens? You lose control over yourself, your memory gets bewildered. What does bewilderment of memory mean? I used to think, oh, in a fight, I forgot all the points that I had to say. No, it's not that. You forget all your... You know, it happens. Like, I used to think bewilderment of memory means, you know, I forgot all my points when I read that for the first time. But no, you forget all the good lectures you have heard, all the good things you have heard. Yeah, so then you forget all those things and then you take wrong decisions. But if we see ourselves from Krishna's point of view, I am spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. My duty is to serve Him, please Him. He loves me unconditionally. You know, so satisfy our basic needs. We all have needs, but have the right strategies of satisfying them in the right place. Instead of trying to satisfy them in the material realm, get them satisfied in Krishna's realm. In a Krishna conscious way. Mm-hmm. Right? So, Krishna sees us as unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly worthy, infinitely worthy. So, there's this example of a lady disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And I think she was a very, very active devotee in the 70s. And... when she was dying, her body was completely disabled. Like she was on the bed. So such an active person who lived an independent life and like, you know, really took, you know, care of others also and, you know, didn't become a burden on anyone. In the end of her life, she was completely bedridden. And then she was speaking to one of the sannyasis who called to, you know, ask her how she was doing. She said, I'm able to do nothing except talk or hear. But she said, I feel like I have infinite value. Her body is not working. She is old. She is about to die. But she's feeling, I feel I have infinite value. Because I'm really realizing how much Krishna loves me. So even in that situation, she's realizing, you know, Krishna loves me even if I'm not able to offer any service to Him right now. But He loves me unconditionally. Right? And we all, it is not just she, of course she's a special devotee, but we all have that potential of realizing that we are of infinite value. So the more we connect with Krishna, the more we will realize our infinite value in the eyes of Krishna. How, and actually it's very humbling to feel that I have infinite value. Krishna values me so much. It's hard
that
to take
my
in.
Question, because Krishna is Atmaram. He doesn't need us for anything. Still he values us who are, we are nothing. Still
yeah,
he values
that's
us.
His unconditional love. Right? And it's hard to
because
take in so much love.
Kids, that's
yes. Right? You don't need anything from your daughter. But you love her unconditionally, right? Our parents don't need things from us, but they love us unconditionally, even if we get upset, even if I don't have gratitude for them.
Yeah.
Right? They love us unconditionally. It's unconditional. This is just, this is actually love. Everything else is give and take. Right? So Krishna loves us unconditionally. So let's get our sense of worth from how Krishna sees us, not how the temporary material world sees us. You know, in the Bhagavatam, there is this shloka, and we can apply it in case of husband-wife relationships, but we can apply it in other things also, you know, whether it is our jobs or things like that. Like in the fifth canto, I think, is it Lakshmi Devi? Yeah, Lakshmi Devi is saying that, you know, that the woman tried to get the love of the husband, but the husband is also a spirit soul who is trapped in the material body, and he is governed by the three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion and ignorance. And he also has the limitations that come with the spirit soul being covered by the body. Right? So it is impossible for our husband or any relationship to completely satisfy us and protect us. And actually there is only one protector and one husband. The Supreme Lord himself. Because he is the one who can unconditionally love us and unconditionally protect us. Why? Because he loves us. So he thinks we are unlimitedly beautiful and we have infinite value. And also, like, you know, we've seen this example of Hanumanji throwing big, big rocks when they're making the setu, the bridge, to cross over to the Lanka, right? And the squirrels are carrying small, small grains of sand, you know, and they are throwing that. And then some of the stronger monkeys are feeling arrogant, you know, that, hey, what you're doing? You know, it's not helping anything. It's not helping us. You know, what is this small, small thing? And then Lord Ram comes and taps those arrogant people's back, hey. I see the consciousness of the service, the heart. I don't see the amount.
The capacity in which you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much eagerly they are trying to do, right? To help, to give, be a part in serving the Lord. So, you know, because we are so conditioned by how the material world sees us, because the material world measures us by results, achievements, right? So many times I used to feel at work that why don't they measure me by the how sincerely I try to do this. Right? Sometimes the result is really not in your hand. But you're not measured by that. You know, everything is result, boom, no promotion. Right? But we're so conditioned with that that's how we also treat ourselves. We start measuring our own worth by how much we have achieved, what our results are, what we achieved, what progress we made and everything, right? But it's not like that. Krishna does not measure us like that. If he is valuing the service of each squirrel who is sincerely trying to put one grain of sand on the same platform as Hanumanji, then you know what a supremely loving and merciful Lord we have who is so wonderful. He is seeing your heart. So all we have to do is just serve him. You know, then we will feel unlimitedly worthy. Because he is always loving us, but then we will feel more in that relationship. So we want to dive deeper in our life. We don't want to swim on the surface, because then you'll be affected by all these changes and the waves and everything that will affect your sense of worth. But when you dive deeper in your consciousness of knowing who you really are, then, you know, we don't need this seminar. Like, you know, then you will get all your self-confidence, all your sense of worth and everything is going to come from the fact that Krishna is my protector. Krishna is everything. And whatever I do, Krishna is doing actually. So then you have nothing to fear. Actually, you become fearless. You know, when you surrender to Krishna, you become fearless. Abhay Charana Ravindare, right? When you surrender to Krishna's lotus feet, you become Abhaya, fearless.
Madhavi, that feeling comes for a few minutes and then you start worrying again.
Yeah, we are so forgetful. We have everything. We know I am a soul. But we forget again, I am a body.
That's why we have to regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day,
that's
hear
lectures
every day. Yes, that's why we need this. And we have to discuss with each other, because then we realize I'm not the only one struggling. Actually,
others are association also helps a lot. I mean, like, even for a couple of days, if we do not chant or, you know, we do not do something properly, our consciousness goes back again. So
yes.
Every day, the consistent practice.
Yes, and if you chant with that feeling, right, Krishna, I am your eternal servant. Please engage me in your service. Please accept me. You know, please, I want to stay connected with you. Please help me. And if you chant with that kind of conscious, that kind of mindset, right, you are able to be in that mindset. Because then you feel the reciprocation of the Holy Name. So we need to develop this. Right? Otherwise, you know, we can keep attending, going to psychotherapists to get sense of worth back, you know, low self-esteem.
Depression.
Yeah, depression. Yeah, and then depression, anxiety, distress, all of these things will come. But when we tap to the fountainhead of love, we have to tap over there, right? It's like, you know, all the psychology and everything is like, okay, they're laying a lot of electricity wires. They're not connected to the powerhouse. So no matter how many electricity wires you put, there's going to be no current.
No.
Right? So we may connect to those electricity wires thinking the bulb of our happiness and self-worth and our anxieties and everything will, you know, light up and the anxiety, depression and everything will go away. No. Those things are not connected to the source. See, just chanting Hare Krishna, being with devotees, constantly engaging in service. You know, sometimes you have to be enthusiastic. You know, it's like even if you have to fake it to be enthusiastic, you have to do it. So in those times, you know, when you're feeling so low and everything, you know, that's all material consciousness. And in those times, we should force our minds to do something spiritual. So loud chanting of Hare Krishna helps. Many times, you know, we are chanting like Hare Krishna. You know, we keep crying and like, you know, the thought, that violin keeps going on. You know, one devotee, Gaurang Prabhu, had come here and said, he said, no matter how much you achieve in life, you know, materially and all, that sad violin keeps going on in your back. That's what he said when he came 3 years, 1.5 years ago. You know, that violin is always going on.
Oh, so true.
That violin can only stop when you are engaged in service. So sometimes you are not feeling like we are spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. But we should do activities connected to Krishna. So to really shut the violin, you have to like loudly chant Hare Krishna. One time Harivilas Prabhu told me, you know, when you're feeling like this, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So you're distracting the mind from that and bringing it to, you know, your mind has to pay attention. Oh, what happened? What is the shock? Right?
Yeah.
But if you just go like Hare Krishna, 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 the mind's violin keeps becoming louder. So you distract yourself, bring yourself back to Krishna conscious activities. You know, then you get your sense of worth again. And you know, this sense of worth, I got this once very, like, you know, it was a very powerful thing for me. I was in a very difficult situation in my life because, you know, I was attached to certain ways of sense of worth. You know, I was not being treated properly. I was being, you know, maligned and so angry, so upset. And then one day I just, you know, I was hearing Bhagavatam or reading Prabhupada's books. And then somehow what Prabhupada said, it brought me to this point that no matter what they do, they can't take away my identity of being servant of Krishna. That identity, nothing can shake, nobody can shake, unless Krishna rejects me as a servant. But I'll still be called as a servant. You know, that is my eternal relationship with him. Jivera Swarup hoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. Krishnera Nitya Das. Yeah? So what is the eternal nature of the living entity?
Yes,
to be an eternal servant of Krishna. Right? Nobody can take that away from me. Nobody can shake that. And when I thought that, when I got that realization, I really didn't feel like fighting anything out, defending myself. I didn't feel like wasting any more time on that. And that day I did like a lot of service. We were stitching an outfit of the deities 6 or 7 years ago. So I just went and started working with those Matajis who were doing that. I was so happy. Of course, then the mind went back down.
Yeah.
And then I had to keep remembering this, you know,
experience.
That Krishna had given me through Prabhupada's mercy, like that. Right? So we have to understand that, you know, all these false designations, we had done this slide earlier, like, you know, there's a soul that's covered with the mind, body and intelligence, that's covered with this body, then it has this false identity, I am this, I'm born in this community, I'm in a woman's body, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm from this country, I have this, you know, these duties, this responsibility, this kind of job. You know, so that's all of that. But if we think like that or we think like that, if we think we are all of those pink circles in this diagram, these false identities, or we think we are spirit soul part and parcel of Krishna, then that is based on that our feelings will change. So if we think we are this body and all the things along with this body, we will continue feeling insecure, anxious, envious, like all the previous examples we discussed. But if we are able to remember through the process of bhakti, by chanting Hare Krishna, hearing every day, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, being with devotees, engaging in service, right, and constantly thinking like that, then we will always feel secure, satisfied and blissful, because Krishna has promised he will always take care of his devotee. And he guarantees that we will come back to him, right? You don't have to have some special, you know, ways of tricking the people here to get some position of going back to Goloka. You just have to be sincere. If dukhi, just by sincerely bringing water every day, and the squirrel by putting grains of sand, has been able to please the Lord, that's what we have to do. So we just have to come to that point.
So we do the same duties either ways, it's just with a different consciousness.
Yes.
Same thing.
Same thing.
This is, yeah. It's just change here.
Just not for our satisfaction.
Krishna
satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah. Just the thought has to change.
Yes. Just that
yeah.
switch. But it's like a pretty hard switch to change.
Keep on forgetting. That was Harivilas Prabhuji always saying. This human body is always, you are going to forget. So you have to keep on reminding us.
Yeah, because see, the emotions will come because, you know, we are marginal. You know, we are between the, we are tatastha, between the spiritual material. So these emotions will come. But whether we are acting out of those emotions or we are acting out of, you know, the real identity, that is important.
Yeah.
Right? In the in the Mahabharata also, when Krishna came as a peacemaker before the war, right? He gave a last option. What did Duryodhan do? He committed the greatest offense. He said, tie this man up. Right?
When he came for 5 minutes.
Yeah. He was so angry,
yeah.
like with Lord Krishna. And then Vidura could not tolerate. So then Vidura told Dhritarashtra, I told you when this man was born, this boy, that you should kill him immediately. He's going to offend. And he's offending the Lord here. And you are tolerating this. You are all finished. And Duryodhana cannot tolerate the fact that Vidura is saying something unfavorable to what he wants to achieve in his life. So he says, throw this person out.
Vidura is thrown out.
Yeah. So then Vidura, one last example I'd like you to know is about this Avanti Brahman. So this Avanti Brahman is also described in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Avanti Brahman used to be a very arrogant man. Extremely arrogant. Very proud of his money and, you know, possession and the respect that he got because of being learned and everything. And he mistreated people. But when he was, you know, old and everything, the sons grew up. And maybe, I think he lost his money or maybe, I don't remember clearly. Whatever. Nobody was treating him properly at home. His wife. Or his kids. He became a liability for them. So then he got so frustrated. Again, in frustration comes detachment, right? We discussed in that Pingala prostitute story. So he left the house. And he was, you know, he had a lot of, you know, he had cultivated a lot of Krishna consciousness, but always there is some contamination. So he was able to overcome that. And then all the people whom he had mistreated, right, before, and seeing his shoddy state that now he's out of his house and he's walking like a madman outside, you know, no proper clothes and covered with full of dust and, you know, all of that, no possessions and everything, then they obviously they'll take revenge, right? Someone is spitting on him, someone is urinating on his food, someone is urinating on him, someone is, you know, taking his food away, or someone is, you know, like really like a rotten treatment. And imagine like what kind of person he was, how he's being treated, but he doesn't get affected.
They should feel pity for him, right? He left all that in here.
Well, people don't feel pity.
Yeah.
Karma works.
Yeah.
Material nature is ruthless. You know, for all our bad actions, we will get it back. So he is mistreated, but he is not affected.
What thoughts comes to his mind to be not affected by
that? He sings. So this is called the Song of the Avanti Brahman. It's in the 11th canto. Just search for the Song of the Avanti Brahman and you will read. He says, I am being treated like this not because, you know, we'll say, oh, because some stars are not aligned properly. Ketu is in this planet and Rahu is in this house. And once they leave our house, then everything will be good, you know. So the problem is Rahu and Ketu and Shani, not us. He's saying that's not the real reason. He's saying, the reason is not the planets, the reason is not the three modes of material nature, the reason is not this, the reason is not this, that I am going through this. He said the reason I am feeling anything is the mind. Because the mind is identifying with this body and all the things of that are happening to this body and the identity that I am getting disturbed. But actually I am spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and if I think like that, I will never be affected. So he was at a very high evolved stage in his spirituality. And because he had overcome all his material desires through the practice of chanting Hare Krishna. So when we chant Hare Krishna, what happens is our material desires are nullified. They get dissolved. So when your material desires are nullified, then automatically something happens for you, does not happen for you, you are not affected because you are not attached to it. So that stage is called Anartha Nivritti. Anartha, you know, unwanted things that are there in our heart are Nivritti, they are finished. So then you are situated at a stage of steadiness that you are all talking about, right? One day we feel like this, another day we feel like this. We feel it happens because we are attached. We have desires separate from Krishna. But when we chant Hare Krishna nicely, we serve the devotees nicely. See, we need Vaishnava Kripa. For that, we have to serve the devotees. Right? We serve in the temple. We serve the devotees. We serve each other. We serve the members in our family because they are also devotees. They are helping. Right? So once we are able to do that and we need Anartha Nivritti, then you can come to the steady platform where you are able to constantly think your spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. So Avanti Brahman was at that stage. So no matter how anyone treated him, it didn't matter. Because he said it's in the mind. Because this, actually I'm spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, but the mind, the mirror of the heart.
Makes it,
yeah.
Look, that you're in trouble. You're
yeah.
doing this.
Mataji, he was hungry. He wanted food and somebody contaminated his food.
But he was so dependent on Krishna, he was sure that Krishna will give it to him. Krishna will take care of him.
Okay.
See, that's a highly evolved,
yeah.
We get anxious, right? He doesn't get anxious. Then we are not anxious. And then no matter what happens, our sense of worth, see, nobody can take that identity from you. So thank you very much.